following presentation, Protecting Valuable Research Data, was given by Andrew Cormack of Janet at Network Shop 42 in April 2014.
Earlier there was mention that Leeds had one of the first websites, so I should credit the idea with putting my Twitter handle, name, whatever, on the first slide to Brian Kelly, who I think was significantly responsible for Leeds' first website, so that's why that is there. Feel free to tweet and whatever, that's there. Okay, how do I make this go forwards? Thank you. Right. Where's the keyboard? There is no keyboard. Ah, there's a keyboard there. Right. Do it that way. Actually, a very nice follow-on from the past couple of talks, I hope. So, talking about protecting valuable research data and really a summary of the work we've been doing over the last year or so, I suppose, with a number of other organisations as we'll come to. So, what sorts of valuable data? Well, could be commercially exploitable data, either by us or other people, politically sensitive data. We heard about climate modelling, weather stroke climate modelling earlier. That could be very politically sensitive if you are doing modelling that feeds into an IPCC report, quite sensitive, but not necessarily private, sensitive in terms of integrity. Sensitive data from others, Bridget mentioned health, and legally or ethically sensitive data that we've generated here, so research that we are doing that may need to be protected or may people might be interested in actually attacking, modifying, whatever. We haven't looked at security-sensitive data, so research into terrorism, things like that, because I discovered that UUK finally snuck out in late 2012 their report on that. So if you are involved in that area and want to know some of the issues around it, that's quite a good paper. Make some interesting assumptions about IT, which I'm surprised there hasn't been more feedback on. So why is that a target? Who is that a target for? Well, competitors, if it's financially valuable, activists who might, because they don't like you or because they don't like the conclusions of your research or because they want to know in advance what the conclusions of your research are going to be, criminals, some of this is valuable. Sean mentioned the quote, cyber, publicity, fair bit of publicity by government under the tag of cyber, which is actually about foreign states, perhaps, certainly foreign businesses, being interested in the sort of information that we've got in universities. So you might think with all these attackers that the safest place to put this was actually in a nice big padlock safe, but that loses the value. Because to be valuable, this data's got to be usable. So, and that involves transferring across our networks, processing by our people, using our systems. So somehow all those networks and people and systems have got to be in the safe too. Only that doesn't work because the same networks, okay, we can segment networks, the same people. How do you put a firewall inside a person? You can do it, but you've got to, you know, there's no point firewalling the network if you're not firewalling the person who's walking around the firewall between day job and evening. Because unlike the corporates, the healths, the people who still look at big fat perimeter protection, our networks do innovation, they do teaching and learning, they do administration, and they do living. That's all on our networks. And when you see something coming out of government saying you should have a corporate cybersecurity strategy, it's not going to work. Because the enterprise model, which scarily governments still seem to think exists, very clear distinction. Work is in here, play is out there. Big wall between them, no doors, or they're all locked. Staff are inside, customers are outside. You're ahead of me, those laughing. Struck me that day is inside and night is outside. 9 to 5 is inside the circle, 5 to 9 is outside. IPR is firmly in the middle of the circle, experimentation, social media. How many companies are still banning access to social media? Sorry, I told you to tweet. I shouldn't have. You're inside the perimeter. Twitter's blocked, isn't it? Yeah, because we're at work. We don't do that. We do something more like this. That's my response to Tim's animation earlier. Except, once you've got everything happening in the same place, your perimeter's gone. And you end up with a kind of a fuzzy blob. So the corporate model doesn't work. What we're trying to do is somehow build some sort of partitions between these things that are all happening in the same place, physical locations, in the same networks, and with the same people. That's a challenge. How are we going to do that? Well, I say over the last year, we've had an awful lot of people together thinking about this, partly under the prompting of Department for Business Innovation and Skills, Cabinet Office, CPNI's Centre for Protection of National Infrastructure, who have got interested in the commercially valuable data, which is why they've come to look at universities, CESG, the kind of Customer Relations Department of GCHQ. I have said that in their premises, and they didn't lock me up. I also told them that if something was badge CESG, you lot might pay attention. If it was badge GCHQ, you wouldn't. And in fact, they stopped a plan to remove the CESG branding, whether it was because of me, I don't know. Cybersecurity Centres of Excellence. There are 7, hands up if you're at one, universities that have, say? 11. 11, all right, 4 more, have been designated as Cybersecurity Centres of Excellence, and some of the computer science people from there were involved. Heads of research administration, this is where it gets interesting. We're going beyond IT, we're going beyond security people. Heads of research administration, heads of university administration. We had the registrar of the University of London involved. Universities UK, again, well beyond IT. Russell Group IT, more IT develop, USISA, and us. And we've been all these people together asking questions. I've summarized the conclusions under 3 headings. They weren't really developed this cleanly, but I've tried to pull things out. And the main organization that took the lead in facilitating them. So in technology terms, Russell Group looked at the CPNI have adopted the SANS top 20 as a good way to do cybersecurity, they think. I discovered last week there are actually 2 issues out of date because they're promoting version 3 and there's now version 5, but never mind. Rugit looked around, looked at the top 20 and said, yeah, we do that. This isn't, Bridget already said, you have an ISMS. You are probably doing somewhere, possibly everywhere, parts of the top 20, in fact, nearly all of the top 20. Conclusion was that some of them, probably about half, I think, are appropriate across the whole organization. So this is enterprise stuff. Do we track vulnerabilities? Yes, you're all on the CERT mailing list, aren't you? Do you do stuff with those vulnerability announcements? Yes, because that's a requirement of being connected to Janet. When you get information about security vulnerabilities, you must do stuff to make sure those aren't a threat to the network or other users of the network. Wireless device control. This one looked interesting because SANS are actually talking about wireless devices connecting to the network. If you look at most university networks, you don't connect wireless devices to the corporate network. You have a bit of wireless and a firewall and the rest of the world, and the internet may well be off there as well. May well be doing that. Backups, yes, we do that. Router security, yep. Port and protocol controls, yes. Boundary defense, for some value of boundary. Logging, yes. Secure network engineering, we really hope so. You're here this week. Incident response, we do this across the organization. Next lot, if you've got, I started talking about security bubbles. We eventually settled on secure enclaves as a slightly more PC way of talking about it. These are Bridget's circles, the special areas. In there, maybe you might say, yes, I need to know every device that can connect to this network. University scale, that's laughable, as Sean said. You couldn't update the database as quickly as people buy new ones. But maybe in a secure area, you can say, actually, the only devices that connect here are that one, that one, that one. Software inventory, again, controlled device configurations, we do that in some places. Secure hardware software configurations, malware defenses, application security, control of admin privileges. Do we try and take away root across the entire organization? Sorry, root admin. Yes, you'll have fun. Do we take away admin rights from the people working on the really sensitive stuff and say, the risk of you shooting yourself in the foot with these controls is just too high? Very possibly. There are some scary figures on number of devices in for service where people have root access and where they don't. I think it's something like 1 in 3 in some organisations. Continuously 1 in 3 devices is out of service because the user with root did something wrong, as against those about 1 in 10 on the figure I saw of where the user did something stupid and only had his own permissions with which to do it. Sorry, stupid, wrong. Where'd I get to? Application security, critical data, well, that's kind of the definition of a secure enclave. Account auditing, at least when did this account log in, when did it log out, maybe what commands were run, maybe what programs were run. You can imagine places within universities where that would be both appropriate and ought to be sellable. Data loss prevention, maybe. Are you doing DPI on the perimeter of these things to look for the sensitive data leaking out? You can imagine places where that might be appropriate. Penetration test, another one used for particularly sensitive areas. PCI, I think, requires it for some levels of standard. So that's sort of the way to think about it. Is this an area where these additional controls are needed? Interesting conclusion. In the wrong place, these can actually make things less secure because they force users into workarounds. Like that. And that is explicit in the UUK report. UUK have written a very good paper. There is, my slide should be on the website at some point. The final slide has all the references. So have a look at the UUK report. The only one of the top 20 that was missing. Universal Security Skills Assessment, Awareness and Training, except at Birmingham. if anybody's getting beaten up with cyber, go and sell this one. Right, we need to train everybody in being part of the InfoSec team. Very much top 20 is a guide, not compliance standard. So that was the technology conclusion. We then looked at the network conclusions. Very much, again, anything that says across the enterprise, just strike that out. Don't see that as a showstopper. Strike it out. It doesn't apply to us. The rest of the document may well do. This is the traditional view. And this was, I knew this was going to be the 5 o'clock talk, so preparing you for tea. The hard sell, soft center. That's the corporate approach. And, well, it didn't work very well for that one, did it? Credit to Bridget for the alternative, the university model. We're a pomegranate. A what, we all said? Well, there's a perimeter. And all the pomegranates I buy, it's a very wrinkly perimeter. That one's suspiciously smooth to me. I don't think it's right. Inside our sort of soft, squidgy, wrinkly perimeter, there's a LAN, which isn't terribly trusted because the students will do the same stuff on their whatever bit of the network they can see as they do on 3G, as they do at home. Now, it's probably about as trusted as the internet. Fortunately, there was nobody from CPNI in the room when I said that. Within that, there are some sensitive seeds, enclaves, and there are some actually hazardous ones. So there are some areas of your network that are, you want the firewall pointing the other way. You need a firewall pointing in to protect the rest of the network from, I won't name names, I'm on audio, but yeah, there are plenty areas. Student residences, that's a safe one to name. Yeah. The student residences network should not be treated as part of a standard part of the university network. You want a firewall between you and it pointing out. Lots and lots of internal partitions. Internal partitions much more interesting than external ones because the step in security model is much bigger. Now, the step in security model between inside and outside How many of you are currently inside your university network? So where's the perimeter? Somebody draw a perimeter around Chris. It's not a terribly big perimeter, not a terribly fat perimeter. The perimeter between the stuff me tweeting and me connecting to the corporate file store, that's a much bigger step and one we ought to be paying more attention to. And that one has to be in behavior as well as in technology. Now, I have a VPN, the token's currently sitting on the desk, but never mind, I can see it, which will allow me to flip randomly between inside the Janet building and just on the internet. And if my brain doesn't notice that change and change my behavior, then the VPN's a waste of time. Now, we spent a lot of time when I started in security worrying about computers bridging between secure and insecure. I think now we have to worry about people bridging between secure and insecure. And unless users understand that and realize that there is a change of behavior required, and it's not a change of behavior between at home and at work, it's between scary stuff and not scary stuff. And both of those can be done at home, can be done at work. Where do people write exam papers? Might be in the office, might be on the train, might be at home. That shouldn't matter. It's what you're doing that matters. And my soapbox, where is my soapbox? It's not really cyber. Cyber is a label that had £680 million attached to it. That has all been spent. It's gone. There is no more money in calling anything cyber. So can we stop calling it cyber? And be aware... Are they listening? Think of it as information security, because that's what it is, that's what it was always. And actually, I made that point, colleagues who are at the meetings will back me up, I made that point repeatedly to CPNI, and none of them disagreed with me. Cyber is a convenient label that had a check attached, but doesn't anymore. I think what we can do, very much Sean's idea, that I don't think we're just the messengers. We're helping you achieve the right balance between risk and benefit. And maybe we can offer packages that, now, if you're category three, these are the sorts of behaviors, technologies, approaches you ought to be doing. If your work is category one, here is a set of behaviors, technologies that you should be using. If you're working on that now, clearly if you're working on both, you need to probably need to do the category three stuff. So maybe this is something we can contribute. Not just the ability to set up technology bubbles, but the matching behavioral and policy bubbles as well. Organisationally, the final one, very much led by Universities UK, they document, says it's a three-step process. Assess the institutional risk, set up effective oversight and reporting, and that has to cover board, information owners, risk owners, information controllers, and information users. All have to be involved. And once you know what the risk is, where the risks are, appropriate proportionate controls at those assets, not enterprise-wide, at the assets. Again, this clear statement that doing too much control actually encourages risky behavior, and then we have lost. And concentrating on those areas where you need, where the risk is higher, therefore you need. One of the ideas I was bouncing around with the new USISA model regs, which were published last week, was an idea of actually maybe the regulation should be what is different from what you assume. Do we actually need to document anymore how to be safe on the internet? We need to tell people, but they need to do that both in work and out. So maybe it's what's different from your assumptions. Don't assume you're sitting on a home broadband with 128 kilobits. You're not. You're sitting on a big fat network where you can do serious damage. So concentrate on the areas where things are different. Another interesting thought, they got away even from not just from this being cyber to this being information security, they're seeing this as part of data management, which is a big push on researchers from a whole load of areas. They are required to do data management plans, many cases. How are you going to protect the data while you're working on it? How are you going to publish it? How are you going to maintain it? And the sort of natural outcome of the UK discussions was actually the security changes at those stages, so the security ought to be part of the plans, because the security requirements of data change dramatically when you publish and when you patent. Once you've patented it, your security requirements change considerably. So this needs to be part of the data management policy, which means it needs to be led by research people, PIs, governors, not IT, implemented by everybody who gets their grubby hands on it, both in terms of what's the risk and in implementing the controls you decide on. Another idea that came up, partly in response to Bridget's pile of standards, is don't, oh, Mr. Funder wants standard A, Mr. Funder wants standard B, Mr. Funder wants standard C. This is how we protect your information. Is that good enough? If it isn't, pay more, because it will cost us more to implement it. Have a standard. Now, whether this will work with some of the pushier funders, I don't know, but I think it's where we need to go, rather than chasing around all the time after every funder with every slightly different version. Again, the open data, the publication stuff fits very much into this. Much more focus on integrity throughout the lifetime of data, confidentiality maybe at the start. Availability becomes an issue once you're talking about mandatory open data. And again, very much the idea that security requirements, security isn't separate, security is just part of how you handle data. So, conclusions, it's people and organizations supported by not just technology, but behavioral help, policy help, and doing too much, trying to be too protective, increases the risk. It's not new, we're already doing it. Somewhere in your organization, you will find all the good practice you need. Somewhere in your organization, you will also find all the bad practice you don't need. So try and spread the good stuff and reduce the bad stuff. Capture it, support it, encourage it. Show others how much better life is. The academics will run away. No, find the academics who are doing it right. Look at their publication records, their uptime, and get the invite others to emulate. I think the answer from the IT, the networks, the information security people is we know how to do this. We are doing it already. It works in parts of our organizations. Let's spread those. We would love to put up case studies, examples, stuff on the websites. Any questions? Otherwise, go and read the references. They're not there to be read, honest, but I did put them all there. The UK paper, which is the second last one, is the one to read, if only that one, because that's what will have landed on your principal's desk already. He won't have read it, but it will have landed there. So it will at least be a cover he recognises. So, and enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thank you.
This recording was brought to you by Janet Training as part of NetWorkshop Online. Further information is available on our website at www.ja.net/training.